Nearly a decade ago, writer Rebecca Frankel started researching war dogs, those intrepid, loyal canines deployed to help sniff out explosives or trap insurgents. She traveled the country visiting military bases where she met handlers, ran dogs through their drills. She even put on a padded suit to experience what it felt like to be attacked by one. The result was her 2014 New York Times bestseller, War Dogs: Tales of Canine Heroism, History, and Love. But none of that prepared her for what happened when she agreed to adopt the retired war dog, Dingo, who came to her after three tours in Afghanistan, where he worked through grenade blasts, firefights, helicopter rides, and more. How would he handle her living room? She tells that terrific story in this month's Smithsonian Magazine, and she's going to tell it to us now. Rebecca Frankel joins us from the NPR studios in D.C. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Just tell us a little bit about Dingo, this noble creature.
Well, it's interesting to think about the dog that I live with now and the dog that you were just describing who did all of these tremendous things and led really what is a quite an amazing and remarkable life, much of the time spent sniffing for bombs in combat zones. Mm-hmm. Now he is a mellow, sweet, loving, a very affectionate and gentle creature. And in the course of reporting this story, I spoke to almost all of his former handlers and got a very different picture of a very different dog who was extremely hard-hitting in his bite drills, a voracious worker, and really kind of could be ferocious when he needed to be. So he's had a lot to deal with and a lot to combine together.
Well, he had been trained to, as you write, propel his 87-pound body weight toward insurgents and lock his jaws around them. He was hardcore. And in the very first minutes of your article, it's late night somewhere, and in front of you is a large dog snapping his jaws so hard that his teeth give a loud clack with every bark, his eyes locked on yours. He wanted a toy that you had. Even after you pick him up at the base in Phoenix, Arizona, where, you know, all the formalities, everything's signed off and you take him, you go to a hotel that night, he trashed it.
Oh, man, did he. And I got very worried. The hotel was very nice about it, but I left him alone for about 5 minutes to take one of the fastest showers I've ever taken, and I came back out, and he was sitting on the middle of the bed, and he had just shredded these pillows, and so there were feathers everywhere. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, what have I done? That was the first time I was seeing that side of him, Dingo the Destroyer, as I sometimes call him now.
Well, then you're on a plane with him. They let him come to your seat. The pilot announces him, a lot of applause for this war hero, which is what he was, saving thousands of lives. But then he begins throwing up. He begins attacking toys, which happens also at home, viciously wanting the toy and then tearing it apart. What was going on?
So, and the warning came sort of post my adoption of Dingo, but as one handler warned me to be very careful with him when we're on a walk, because if he were to see a ball go out in the middle of the road, even if a Mack truck was coming, he was going to go after the ball, which sort of illustrates the incredible drive he has for toys, which comes from, during his training, using toys as the reward. So it's not that he just wants to play with a toy. It used to represent something a lot more deeply ingrained in him than that. Mm. And so his drive for it was just meteoric. I don't know how else to describe it. Right. It was relentless.
But then Dingo began to twist himself into a pretzel to clamp down right above his hind leg and grip himself in rhythmic bites. This is called flank sucking. I mean, that's how anxious he was.
It's not totally uncommon. It's just a compulsive habit, the way someone might pick at a scab. It's a self-soothing habit. And Belgian Malinois, which is the breed that Dingo is, are very high in anxiety, high prey drive dog. So when they're not moving around and they don't have a lot of physical activity, there's a lot of wasted energy burning.
Well, and let's back up a second, because Dingo had been with a couple of people in combat, including Justin Kitts. And you describe some of the things that they did, going over the wire, you know, into the line of fire, not just fired at, but had small devices shot at them. And he describes Dingo, you know, flattened on the ground because this bomb that's exploding a couple of feet from him, he's hearing even more because of his dog ears than the humans around him. Do you think that Dingo had post-traumatic stress?
So it's interesting because when I first adopted Dingo, it was in the spring, and July 4th was not that far away. And I live in a pretty busy D.C. neighborhood where there are a lot of firecrackers that get set off. And we were out walking, and he doesn't respond to those things. So this anxiety and the difficulty he had adjusting to life as a house dog, I think had a lot more to do with giving up his sense of purpose than I think it did with any truly traumatic experience.
Funny you say that, sense of purpose, because that's what other soldiers told you, that it also happens mm-hmm. to returning veterans. I mean, somebody I think said to you, well, think about it. Would you have invited a veteran you didn't know to come sleep on your couch?
That was Matt Hadala, who was a Marine dog handler who had been deployed to Afghanistan. And he dealt with his own difficulties coming back. He adopted his dog, who recently passed away. And all these experiences, I think, combine to make what we call normal life not normal anymore. And I think for Dingo, what my expectations of him being happy to sort of live in a house and sleep in a bed and getting to go to a dog park, those things don't make him happy, or they didn't, at least at the time. Yeah. What made him happy was getting up and sniffing for bombs and having a handler. And those were the things that he knew, and those were the things that he loved doing. And I couldn't provide those things for him.
Well, a couple things. First of all, we just did a story recently on how marijuana sniffing dogs are being retired because you can't unteach them to sniff for marijuana, and that's becoming legal now. So
it's I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and I'm thinking you're talking about teaching a dog to unsniff for explosives. Knowing, I mean, I don't think I'm anthropomorphizing here. He mm-hmm. seemed to understand it was important and he was saving lives. Mm-hmm. But you also spoke with Doug Miller, former manager of the Department of Defense Military Work Dog Program, who said that more civilians than ever, something like 1,200, are on the list to adopt these war dogs. Do you think that's a good idea?
It's something that I thought a lot about, especially at the beginning, whether or not I was equipped to be the person that Dingo needed me to be and to give him the home that Dingo needed. I think what's required is a very clear-eyed vision of what it's going to be. In the end, I think what I was always searching for when I was struggling with Dingo was to correct my own behavior. What are the things I'm not doing? I adjusted in the right ways. It just required a lot of consistency and patience.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to ask. What happened? I mean, because there at the end of the article, he is calm and older, you know, a little graying.
So the first thing that happened that was important was that I reached out for help and contacted someone who knew Dingo very well. And that person was Justin Kitts. And I called him that night when Dingo and I were having this sort of face-off over a toy where I got scared. And he knew what Dingo needed. And that was not a dog bed, but it was a crate, because Dingo had always slept in a crate, and that's where Dingo felt safe. And I didn't have a crate ready. And that was my first mistake. And then I just decided that I had to do what was best for both of us to keep some sanity in the house. And for me, that was setting up a routine. We get up at the same time. We took walks in the same place for the same amount of time. For about a month and a half, I came home every day at lunch to be the person that walked him during the day. And I took away all of the toys and then slowly, slowly reintroduced them back into his life until finally, we got to a point where now there are toys out all the time.
It just feels like you've got, you know, a lovely older veteran with you now. And I mean, are you conscious of that still, though? This is a war hero.
It's something that I don't always have in the forefront of my mind. And I'm glad about that. I want him to just be a dog. I think that that's the big reward that he gets in life right now. But when I think about it and writing and researching this article, I've learned more about him than I ever knew. It really shakes me out of the moment every once in a while to sort of take a minute and realize that there are people who are walking around on this earth who are there because he was there for them in the beginning. And I've heard from them and I've heard from their parents, and it's special. He is very special.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Rebecca Frankel, again, her article about the retired war dog Dingo is in the Smithsonian Magazine. We'll link you up. Rebecca, thank you.
Thank you so much.